Hi, everyone, and welcome to Murder Friends, the podcast where three friends from three different countries talk about murder. My name's Alana, and I'm Canadian.
Hi, I'm Anna, and I'm American.
My name's Hannah, and I'm British.
So sit back and relax. You're among friends, and let's talk murder.
So how are you guys feeling today? We had a bit of a celebration this weekend, didn't we?
I mean, I don't feel great. But I think that's just what happens when you get to, like, your 30s.
Yeah. You look too long at a glass of wine and you're hungover for 3 days.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely didn't look at any wine.
No. We consumed.
I definitely put that wine inside me. Yeah. I think that's where I went wrong.
Exactly. Yeah, same. Today I just didn't feel very well. And I had Poppy's first parents, like, night, you know, where you have to, like, go and they tell you how they're doing and everything. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Anyway, so I made myself look acceptable. And, I just got this really fragile stomach right now. food. Okay, so I'm there and I was like, the kids running around and I'm already feeling a bit, you know, how I am. And we're just getting ready to leave. And this, like, poor little boy just pukes everywhere.
Oh my god.
In the middle of it. Like, I'm talking not just a little bit, like a lot. And I was just like, oh my god, I'm gonna go now. Oh my god. Oh,
no. I'm going to.
Yeah, I'm down. It was like, oh, it's not good. Oh, my stomach's going over thinking about it again.
Let's anyway, still talk about vomiting. Yeah, I like to this is like day two of the hangover. I don't want to talk about day one. Day one was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was a bad day. It's bleak.
Yeah. I like ordered a McDonald's breakfast from my phone.
Oh,
it's good.
Like, then I realized I had to go downstairs and get it, and then I nearly cried.
That's the same. Like, that's usually my level of, like, oh, I've got a hangover. Is, do I Uber Eats McDonald's to the house? That's like top of the line hangover. Yeah. But it was good. Hopefully tomorrow I'll feel like a human again.
I got high hopes for a Tuesday. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Bring on the Tuesday. Yeah. This weekend, it is my other half's birthday coming up. Big day. She's turning 50. Decided to have, like, you know, this party, all of our friends and family. And also to get married and surprise everyone. And surprise wedding everyone. So you'd think it was great. It's what we wanted. We, like, ran off, basically. And got married and then
eloped.
We eloped and then told everyone, like, surprise, guess what? And most people were happy.
We were very happy for you.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a perfect idea.
Yeah. It was so you as well. It was like the perfect, like, you two type of thing to do. It was great.
It was good. It was good fun. I think it was just my mother-in-law was a bit upset, which I totally actually get, you know. But I think the whole thing is, like, we just didn't want to, like, tell anyone. So, but anyway,
because otherwise you have to have, like, a big wedding. No one wants a big wedding.
No,
they're so stressful and, like, so expensive.
Yeah. Ooh. I was like, I was not bothered about any of that. We weren't bothered about that, any of that. But we did want to have the party. And so, that was important.
Definitely had a party.
Yeah. So,
I still feel like it's inside me now.
Yeah. We're still on day two of the hangover at the minute. The thing is Will got tons of alcohol as presents. And Will's like, yesterday, he's like, he said he had to stop opening them because it was making him sick.
Oh, no.
Actually, the best thing as well is Will fell into the bathtub when we got home. I think and Hannah's husband had to go and rescue him.
Yeah.
It's like a turtle stuck in there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, we thoroughly celebrated him turning 50 and getting hitched, so that's
big celebration. What's going on?
All right, so true crime news. Today I've got a story about, have you guys heard of Samuel Little?
Yeah,
the serial killer. Have you heard about him?
Only like the broad strokes, but I don't know the details.
Okay. Well, I got most of my information is from Wikipedia, and also from a Sky News story by Chris Robertson. The reason Sammy Little has been in the headlines lately is because he has essentially confessed to almost 100 murders.
What the fuck? 100?
100, yeah. Just, I think 93. So almost 100. He's already serving multiple life sentences in California, and he's now, the FBI have said, he is the most prolific serial killer in the U.S. So what I'll do is I'll just sort of tell you about it. There's some of it I literally took directly from Wikipedia because I wanted to... It's one of those stories where he was able to get away with it for far, far too long. And he was, like, many a times let off. So I thought I'd kind of, like, give you a little bit of info about Mr. Little. So he's 79 now, and he's been in prison since 2012 for the murders of three women, but told detectives last year he'd killed more than 90. That's when he finally started to confess. The FBI have now said that that crime analysis and investigators believe all of the confessions are credible, with 50 of them being verified so far.
Oh my God.
Because I know you get that quite a lot with, like, serial killers when they're like, yeah, but I killed loads of other people and it's never verified. But to have the FBI say, like, no, that's true, that happened, that's terrifying. Yeah.
They've been able to... he started to draw pictures of his victims, and they've been able to, like, link different... you know, different murders. Many of his, if not nearly all of his victims, were like sex workers or had drug issues. So some of the crimes, almost like they didn't realize they had been murdered because of just their lifestyles. I think he was able to hide it. But yeah. So Little was born in 1940 in Georgia. He claims that his mother was a sex worker, and shortly after birth, he moved to Ohio, where he was mainly raised by his grandmother. He had issues with, like, discipline in school and acting out. And in 1956, after being convicted for breaking and entering into a property in Omaha, Nebraska, Little was held at an institution for juvenile offenders. In 1961, he was sentenced to 3 years in prison for breaking into a furniture store. He was released in 1964. By 1975, he had been arrested 26 times in 11 states for crimes including theft, assault, attempted rape, fraud, and attacks on government officials.
Jesus.
Okay, so in 1982, as we're getting on here, he was arrested in Mississippi and charged with the murder of a 22-year-old woman named Melinda LaPree. She'd gone missing in September of that year. A grand jury declined to indict Little for the murder of LaPree, though. However, while under investigation, Little was transferred to Florida to be brought for the trial of a 26-year-old woman, Patricia Mount, whose body was found in September of 1982. Prosecution witnesses identified Little in court as the person who spent time with Mount on the night before her disappearance. But due to the mistrust of witness testimonies, Little was acquitted in January 1984. Yeah, exactly. So then Little moved to California, where he stayed in the vicinity of San Diego. In 1984, he was arrested for kidnapping, beating, strangling Lori Barrows, 22 years old, who survived. 1 month later, he was found by police in the backseat of his car with an unconscious woman, also beaten and strangled in the same location as the attempted murder of Barrows. So literally the same place. Little served 2.5 years in prison for both crimes.
How is that possible?
Exactly. Don't know, some serious, like, ball dropping going on with the whole thing, really. Upon his release in February 1987, he moved to Los Angeles, where he committed more than 10 additional murders. Little was arrested on the 5th of September 2012 at a homeless shelter in Louisville, Kentucky, after authorities using DNA testing were able to connect him to the murder of Carol Elford, killed in 1987. Apodaca, killed on September 3rd, 1987, and Audrey Nelson, killed on August 14th, 1989. All three women were killed and later found on the streets of Los Angeles. So he was finally charged in January 7th, 2013, and a few months later, the police said that Little was being investigated for involvement in dozens of murders committed in the 1980s. His trial began in 2014, and they had DNA evidence, and they were finally able to convict him, although he'd been a career criminal. And in September 25th, 2014, Little was found guilty and sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. On the day of the verdict, though, Little was still insisting that he was innocent, and he's been serving, he's been in prison since. But as he's gotten older and his health has gotten worse off, he has started to confess the murders and even drawing portraits of the victims, as I said before. The other thing I kind of mentioned before was that Little's victims were often suffocated or strangled, in many cases leaving few physical marks and leading investigators to determine the women died of overdoses or natural causes. So the women he preyed on, which so often you hear about serial killers, they're an easy target. Unfortunately, I think they just couldn't attribute. They died from something else. But it sounds like he is now, I guess, confessing to them all.
What was the gap between his, last murder and his conviction in 2014? Because, that's a really long period, isn't it? I mean, I know he's killed, 100 women, but 100 people.
There were more women he killed up until then. In the 80s, I think he killed quite a lot.
Mm.
I don't know if some of the ones that are now, they're now finding that he has killed were kind of what happened since the 80s.
Yeah.
There wasn't it might be out there, but I couldn't find a clear timeline because I don't even think they actually know just yet. I think it's still an evolving thing. I think he is now working with the FBI. And I imagine at some point we'll be able to locate an actual timeline of how he did. I think the ones that they were finally able to get him on were ones in the 80s. But it sounds like he had been doing it, they had several times they tried to convict him of crimes, murders, before that, and failed, twice at least.
It's hard to imagine. Okay, you think of a room of 100 people. That's a lot of bodies. And you'd have to, I guess if he's been killing for decades. But even still, if you killed 12 people in a year, one a month, 12 in a year, that's that's a long time.
Didn't even think of it like that. It just really puts that in perspective of how many people that really and, very likely there's probably quite a lot that he doesn't remember clearly.
I don't even think I could name you 100 people.
No.
People I know. People I like. No. I mean, I can name you 3 people I like, and that's about it. But
exactly,
but that's unbelievable. It really is.
Exactly.
It'll be interesting too if they do finally release the names of all these people and what they think the timeline was, because, like you said, there are so many times where it's almost like people in prison, I don't know, maybe they just get bored and they think, I'm gonna confess to some of these crimes because I'll get more attention and maybe I'll get privileges where I can go out and help the people search for bodies. You see that a lot on Dateline episodes. But the fact that they're actually saying, no, this is legit, that's terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure there'll be more stuff coming out eventually, will be released about what happened, what really happened.
Okay, so for this week, for our reviews, I really wanted to talk about the new podcast from Dateline NBC called The Thing About Pam. Now, I know all 3 of us have listened to it, and we've actually not discussed opinions yet because we wanted to wait until now.
It was so hard to be quiet about it.
When I was thinking about how I wanted to get into this, I think The Thing About Pam is probably one of my favorite podcasts from this year. It's definitely in the top 5. So I really don't want to spoil it because there are some turns near the end where I did not see coming. So I've gone through a little bit of a synopsis. Nothing that doesn't come out, at least right at the beginning. No spoilers, little bit of spoilers, but no major ones. Because I honestly think this is one of the best ones, at least one of the best stories that I've listened to recently. And if you are interested at all in listening, I don't want to give away the end. So The Thing About Pam is the newest podcast from Dateline, which we talk about in our True Crime 101, which is one of my favorite TV shows. There are so many twists in this story. So originally it was a Dateline episode. And I guess they realized that there's a lot more here than just a 1-hour TV show. So our main man, Keith Morrison, is the host of the story. And I think he was absolutely wonderful.
His voice. So yeah. Good.
So good. No. So good.
No.
Yeah, we'll get to Hannah's opinion about Keith in a minute. Our story starts with a couple. Betsy, or rather Elizabeth Betsy Ferrara. I can't really say that surname. I'm really sorry. So she lived in Troy, Missouri with her husband, Russell. In 2010, Betsy was diagnosed with breast cancer and it was looking like it was going to be terminal. So enter Pam Hupp. Betsy and Pam worked together at State Farm Insurance. Kind of like fairly good friends, co-workers at the very least. Everything's fairly normal. Betsy is then found dead in her own house from multiple stab wounds. She's found by her husband, Russ, who believes she's committed suicide because her wrists have been cut. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of blood. He's panicked. He doesn't really see what's happening. He thinks that perhaps Betsy had killed herself. You know, she had breast cancer. It was all very scary. He calls 911 and is like very, very frantic. However, he is pretty much quickly arrested and convicted of her murder, life in prison, end of the story. And up until this point, the story is fairly typical, especially for a Dateline episode. You know, husband kills wife, husband gets convicted, arrested, off he goes, end of the episode. However, people weren't really sure about the motive because Betsy was, you know, already dying, to put it lightly. So why would you risk something like this just to kill your wife? So it didn't really make sense, but that's pretty much overlooked and he is very quickly convicted. So like I said, I don't want to get into too many spoilers because the case is legitimately insane, but one of the things that starts unraveling this whole story is money, which it often does. And it comes out that unbeknownst to her family, Betsy changed the sole beneficiary of her State Farm life insurance policy from her husband to her friend Pam. Pam is the only one who has a financial gain in Betsy's death, which, again, is not like the most obvious evidence necessarily. Pam starts saying, well, Betsy changed the policy so Pam could put the money in a trust for Betsy's kids and keep the husband out of it. But like an absolute, I don't know what to call it. She decides, actually, no, I'm not going to do that. So Pam keeps all the money. She changes her story after she's like on record telling police that Betsy did this so I could put money into a trust. She goes, no. Betsy always said that I should keep the money. Her friend from work, you know, like we all want to just give all our money to our friends at work. Again, without spoiling it, there are two more murders in this story, which is unbelievable. And I had no idea where it was going or how it was going to play out. I genuinely believe it's a great podcast, especially as a Dateline podcast. It's really high quality. There's only 6 episodes and they're usually about 30 minutes apiece, which makes it really easy to listen to and pretty easy to binge. And you can get it obviously wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you need a new podcast, you want a true crime mystery, you want something that's fairly easy to listen to, The Thing About Pam, yes, please, 100%. Yes. So what did you guys make of it?
It was, I have to agree with you, I think it's definitely one of the best podcasts this year so far. It's really well produced. Like you said, there are so many other little twists and turns. And I think you did good, like, that we don't spoil all of it. So, you know, if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it now. It's a good one to binge. And I think the other thing was how crazy the police, how bad the police work on Betsy's murder was. It was so outrageously bad. I hope they lost all of their jobs, especially, like, this coming out. Like, you should not be employed by the police. I mean, outrageous. That always usually makes up a good crime podcast, is when the police screw up an investigation, and they really, really do. And Russ ends up spending years in jail too, doesn't he? But the story doesn't even end there. So like that's pretty, you know, that's not even the crazy part of the story, is it?
Yeah, I was just, it. And again, it's one of those stories where murder happens, guy gets arrested, potentially maybe guy should not have been arrested. And as a listener, when you finally, of course, we get all the evidence at the end. We're not there along the years as they're doing this investigation. We get everything at the end. And as a listener, you are like screaming into the void. Like, it's so obvious. Like, how could you not get it?
Hannah, what did you think?
His voice, I can't.
Really?
Oh, there's something about it. To me, it's spooky. It made me feel creeped out.
That's so funny.
And I know it's like you two love Dateline and it was like your thing growing up. Maybe it's because I didn't grow up with it, but oh my God, his voice is creepy. It's so admit it's creepy, please.
It's a little bit creepy.
Just like a tiny bit creepy. Come on, please. No.
Like, I want him to read me Christmas stories.
I don't know about that.
He could read me a Halloween story and that'd be fine, but like.
I don't find him creepy. I think I just, like, I don't know.
It's just like the gaps between words and it's like, ooh. Oh no. But other than that, the story's fantastic. It's really well produced and I would listen to it again. So I got over the creepy voice part. But no, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. The second and third deaths in the podcast were just like, I just really wanted to like text you guys or something. Kidding, because I knew we weren't going to talk about it. I recommended it to someone at work actually, and she was like on episode 4 and she was like, oh, do you not think it's a bit obvious about how it's going to finish? And I was just like,
no,
you just need to finish it. Can you just like finish it and then we can talk about it? No, it was good.
Yeah, I think it's one of those podcasts where I really did not see. I mean, when you say I didn't see the end, there's the obvious end, but then how we get to that end, you're just like, what the fuck? And then obviously there's stuff about Pam, right? You know, the thing about Pam, there's things about Pam that when I finished the podcast, I didn't want to do it too early because I didn't want to spoil it for myself, but I had to Google what she looked like because I was like, I'm picturing this just like middle-aged white woman from, you know, Missouri, not too glamorous or exotic or fancy, and then you hear like what she gets up to and it's just like, oh my God.
I think it's the bit in the like in the is it when she's in the bathroom of the police station. Yeah. And she's,
oh my God, yeah.
Sorry, I just did a movement which you obviously can't see.
Yeah,
sorry, but you know, oh, ooh. That was terrifying. I thought that was like almost psychopathic that you could be doing that.
That was nuts.
And being like, everything's fine.
She had there's. Have you seen her mugshot where she's got like the bandages on?
Yeah.
Right. I saw somebody on something. It might have been like a Murderino thing, like dressed up as her for Halloween. It full on went as her mugshot.
That's such a niche costume. Oh, I love it so much.
And it was like, the caption was like, yeah, I know, I'm probably going to hell, aren't I?
Oh my God.
It was good though. They did a really good job. She had the same hair, so it like worked.
Oh.
But yeah, okay, everyone, I think this is another one that we're like unanimously, I can't even say that word.
Unanimously.
Please forgive me. Just remember the hangover. Unanimously?
Yeah.
Yes, there we go. We've all loved it. I think it's up there with The Ballad of Billy Walls. I mean, they're obviously very different, but I think those are definitely, it's up there with being one of the best of the year.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I was thinking about this morning in terms of like what I've actually listened to this year and what I actually remember listening to, because sometimes you just kind of like roll through them and they don't really leave a mark. But I think definitely the thing about Pam is up there. It's also, I think, a really good podcast if you are kind of like interested in true crime murder mysteries, but you're not really sure. You don't want to listen to something that's massive or there's a new story each week. Like, you just want something to just give it a try, because I think it's so easily told. Like, the story is perfectly explained, and yeah, I just 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 for me.
Agreed.
Same.
So if you want to check out The Thing About Pam, it is literally all over the internet. So have a listen and let us know what you think.
So the second thing we want to talk about today is a documentary by HBO called I Love You Now Die. We're going to talk about some pretty strong themes in this one. surrounding suicide and mental health. So if you think you might be affected by those topics, you can always skip ahead, but help is always available and we'll put some links on our website. So I Love You Now Die is a two-part documentary directed by Erin Lee Carr and produced by Andrew Rossi that follows the hearing of a woman suspected of coercing her boyfriend to complete suicide. Comrade Roy was 17 when he passed away of carbon monoxide poisoning in July 2014 after purchasing a generator and rigging the exhaust pipe into his car. His girlfriend, Michelle Carter, 17 at the time of his death, is charged with involuntary manslaughter after a series of text messages were discovered, which seemed to encourage him to kill himself. Have you both watched it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen the documentary, but I am so sorry for saying this again. I think it was a Dateline episode that I watched.
Yeah, there is a Dateline episode. Yeah. Annie, you've watched it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Cool. So the documentary is divided into two parts. The first follows the argument of the prosecution and the second of the defence. It takes its time on both parts. It really clearly and sort of concisely sets out the information, and it's interspersed with interviews from family and friends of Comrade. Michelle and her family refused to be interviewed for the documentary. So the case and the legal part of the matter pivoted on the text message exchanged between Roy and Carter during the period immediately prior to his eventual death. At one stage, he exited the exhaust fume-filled car and Carter told him to get back inside. The judge ruled Carter guilty, as when he exited the car, he, Comrade, quote, broke the chain of causation, end quote. And then her messages encouraging him to re-enter the vehicle constituted, they call it wanton and reckless behaviour, which left her liable to be found guilty of the charge of involuntary manslaughter. I think we all made our own judgments about Michelle. And I think the ferocious media coverage of it also did. There was constant comment on her appearance and her facial expression. But this documentary really goes deep into the background of both of those teenagers, their upbringing, their struggles with mental health and their relationship. And as that goes on, a sort of a different picture kind of develops. One of a abusive relationship, a relationship where they only met around five times, yet most communication was through text message. One of two teenagers with severe mental health issues. One of a girl with eating disorders who had self-harmed and was chronically lonely begging for a friend and who begged her boyfriend not to harm himself in the beginning of their relationship. He previously attempted suicide on more than one occasion, even being hospitalised as a result. I think it really brings into focus mental health and the disconnect between a text message and saying something to someone's face. I think in the documentary, there's actually an expert that explains that there's almost a disassociation through a text message based relationship, as if you can't fathom another person being at the other end of the device. So you say things that you'd never say to someone's face. The documentary is really heartbreaking on a number of points, but I found it to be an expert mix of empathy and harsh reality. Great editing, visual effects. They ping a lot of the text messages up on the screen.
Yeah, that was really good.
It was showing these landscapes, and it would have the messages pop up on either side of the screen. It was really, really well done. I think it makes it a really worthwhile watch. And definitely more of a worthwhile watch if you've formed an opinion on the case. Because there's so much more information. Unbelievable.
The Dateline episode, I remember it because it was such a different story. It's not the typical murder mystery. But I do remember that episode being very much centered on how could she do that? She's evil. And that was kind of the narrative, at least from what I remember, that she coaxed him into doing this, that he really changed his mind partway through. He didn't want to do this anymore. He wanted to stop, and she was the one that put him back in the vehicle. But from what I remember, it does not dive into any sort of thing that she was going through or any sort of mental health on that side. Mm. It was very much, she's done this.
In the first part of the documentary, you definitely get the she's obviously because it's the prosecution's side, she's not painted well, and she does seem like she has some severe issues. But again, that could be the editing, it could be the way you see it. You're not getting the whole picture. That the way she behaved after he died, where she was just eating up the attention that she received, and it seemed to become about her. It was a bit odd. She organized those the baseball games for him, but organized it at her house, that's where where she lived in the town she lived in and stuff like that. I really like how they sort of did it where they did paint like both sides, like they did give you, because that's the biggest thing with a lot of like true crime documentaries. It's always, there's always an agenda. The person making it has an agenda. Like there is always, you know,
they have an opinion
that they want. Yeah.
It is entertainment.
Exactly. And they want to show their side of whatever they believe. I mean, you just watch Making a Murderer and you can, you know what I mean? It's going to all be told in a way that is, you know, that sort of thing. So I thought it was really good that they did it a bit differently there. And it seemed almost a bit more fair.
Funnily enough, when I was finishing up on this and I was like typing this up, I was like scrolling through Facebook to look for an article, which I didn't find. And I got another news story about a similar kind of case.
Oh, shit.
So it again happened in the US, and in I think it was 2019. In Young Yu, 21, is charged with involuntary manslaughter after her boyfriend, Alexander Utala, sorry if I messed that up, he completed suicide 90 minutes before his graduation commencement ceremony. This case might be a bit different, as she was apparently on the roof of the parking garage where he fell to his death.
Oh my God.
Again, this case highlights there was 75,000 text messages between the couple, 47,500 of them coming from her. And the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office quoted in a press conference, the indictment alleges Ms. Yu's behaviour was wanton and reckless and resulted in overwhelming Mr. Utala's will to live, and that she created a life-threatening conditions for him that she had a legal duty to alleviate. So it's like, I'm really interested to see where this one goes as well after watching that one.
I think wow. I saw yeah. something about this too on like an article, but I think some people are like, well, this is like a dangerous precedent that you can be.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know anything about that case. I just saw some people were like, well, it's going to get a bit out of hand. But then I guess that's what like manslaughter is though, isn't it? Like
when
you're not, like how much of a legal responsibility do you have?
Michelle Carter was found guilty of it. You know, she had I think it was a 21-month sentence, which was reduced to 15 months. She's halfway through her sentence now. But it's just like, you are culpable for that. Yeah, that is it, like, you're responsible for your actions. You can't tell a boy, like, you can't tell someone who's in a car trying to kill themselves to then get back in the car. That should be illegal.
I think people complaining on the internet saying that this might, you know, open a can of worms. It's one thing to have an argument, say, with somebody through text message or what have you, but it's a very other thing to tell someone, I think you should end your life. You should get back into that very dangerous situation you should die now.
Yeah.
It's different.
Like that right or wrong thing, which I don't think, maybe she didn't understand that. Michelle Carter didn't understand that, but I don't know. There seems to be a...
I think there's just... With her...
Yeah.
It seems like... Okay, because she did tell... Didn't she tell her friends a few days before he did it that he had done it? Or something like that? Like, she had... It's like the attention that she wanted.
Yeah, I think she said that, I think he's killed himself. I can't get hold of him. And obviously all of her friends were, like, clamouring around her. But then when he did kill himself, she did that again. And she was just like, I can't get hold of him. I can't, he's not picking up the phone. And it's at that point she knew he was dead.
Yeah, she already knew.
And then there was another point where she told one of her friends, like, I think it's my fault. I told him to get back in the car.
Yeah, it's my fault.
Yeah.
It is your fault. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. But I think it's very well put together. The documentary is great. I would definitely recommend it. I'd give it like a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think I'd say definitely a 4 out of 5. It's worth a watch, and it's a bit different than, like I said, a lot of other true crime stuff is. And it's just not the same sort of thing either. That's just a whole different sort of case than we normally would watch a documentary about.
Weird Crime Time.
So this week for Weird Crime Time, I'm taking you to Chorley in Lancashire, which is a little bit northwest of Manchester, to meet Stephen Gaskell, who got into a bit of trouble on the 5th of July 2019. So the headline from the Lancashire Post is, Dancing Chorley Flasher Balanced a Pie on Head Before Exposing Himself at Road Junction.
All right.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there.
It's a lot. So Two women were standing outside a local optician's when they spotted Stephen acting strangely. They noticed he was pacing up and down, and then he began dancing. After he'd finished dancing, he proceeded to try and balance a pie on his head. He then dropped his trousers and exposed his genitals. When he noticed...
I mean, wait, what kind of pie was it? Like, I mean, it was a really good pie.
I have no idea. It's not judged. Like, yeah, I wonder how big
it's
it
gotta was. It's got to be an apple pie. Apple or apple and rhubarb, maybe?
Yeah.
Edgy business. Not like a meat pie?
Oh, I didn't even think that. Like a, what about, like, banoffee? Is that a pie? Like a banoffee. Yeah, I mean, I might. Yeah. You never know. I mean, it depends on how good the pie is.
So when he noticed the women were watching, and I like to call it the pork pie pervert, pulled up his trousers and walked away. I don't know if it was a pork pie. It just sounded funny. Although denying the charge of exposure with intent to cause alarm and distress, he was found guilty by Preston Magistrates Court. So the penalty for exposure with intent to cause alarm and distress is actually pretty severe. He could face up to 2 years in prison or the requirement to sign to the sex offenders register for 2 years. He was due to be sentenced on the 26th of September, but I can't find any update.
So, hold on. The pork pie pervert could potentially serve more time in prison than... the girl from the manslaughter, you should kill yourself in the car case.
Oh my God.
Yep. For flashing your dick at a woman. Which, you know, is sexual assault, like, really.
True, yes.
Yeah. But it's okay, you can just text your boyfriend to go kill himself. So I was thinking, what would his punishment be for this? Should he be forced to balance a pork pie on his head and walk through the town?
Oh, like Cersei.
Yeah.
Little Game of Thrones style.
Yeah,
shame.
Pie. Bake the ladies, he flashed a pie that says, sorry, I flashed you. Or be forced to only eat free bento's pies for a year.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's pie. I'm wondering what type of pie he had on his head now.
I know.
Because a pork pie is pretty, like, readily available. You can get a pork pie anywhere. But if it's, like, a big pie, would you balance that on your head knowing that you could drop that? And if you dropped a pie, you'd be really sad.
Exactly.
I don't know if he was really considering... the pie at that. I mean, if you're dancing kind of like in the street and you think, you know what would really compliment this dance? Putting something on my head.
Oh, that's funny. It reminds me of back to last week. Was it last week that's Florida Man? And the man with the catfish?
Oh, he pulled out his pocket.
Yeah.
But there were live catfish.
Where do you get it?
Like, what's happened? This is what I'm saying. I want to know what happened 3 hours before this incident. What were you doing?
How did you get to this point?
It does make sense. If it was a pork pie, you could probably have a couple of those in your pockets.
You can get really small, you know, the small ones. Yeah.
Because in my mind, I'm thinking like an apple pie, you know, that grandma made. But then he would be, you know, how do you transport that easily?
Exactly. Do you know what this reminds me of as well? Not to veer off subject, but do you guys remember the Swiss cheese pervert?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
So I was trying. I was trying to move away from animal crimes, which I know we're a bit of, into like food crimes. So.
Yeah. Exactly. So like, there's the guy that was really turned on by Swiss cheese.
Maybe we should have like segments.
Segments.
Like a month of animal crimes, a month of food crimes.
Yeah. There we go. Okay, I think that's all we have for today, guys. If you want to check out our website at murderfriends.com, we always have a blog on there, just something about what we've chatted about. Also, you can find all of our sources from the stuff we chatted about today. You can find that on our website. You can follow us on our Instagram, murderfriendspod, and follow us on Twitter, murderfriendspd. Bye!